This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Yanny or Laurel 2018 has seen more brain cells put to waste on memes and silly viral challenges on YouTube. However, there were some innovations that happened which has continued to build the foundations of our future. Artificial intelligence, for example, has taken a lot of strides forward and data privacy is on top of everyone's lips. Also, are we going to lose our jobs? To AI isn't a question anymore, it has become a fact, but in a positive way. Upskilling and reskilling is a must and we should not be doing mundane tasks that could be automated. To look back at the year that was 2018, here with me today is Zefri Yusuf from Google Malaysia. Zef, welcome back to the show. It's been a long time.
Oh yeah.
Very long
time.
Glad
to be back, Jeff.
And recently, Google released the Year in Search report. So I guess we should start by looking at maybe some of the global trend searches of the year.
Yeah, certainly. Well, this year was the year of the World Cup, definitely. We saw it trending in Malaysia and it trended globally as well. And it even trended in some countries you normally associate with football or soccer.
And this time around, I think the World Cup was like really much an online thing. So it shows as well in the report. Nearly every country, the World Cup was the number one search.
And nearly every country had some sort of World Cup live streaming or at least highlights, Malaysia included. So for the first time, folks were actually able to check out YouTube highlights, at least, you know, within half an hour of the matches, right?
It just shows how we are so connected to the online world that even for a live sporting event, it's now an online kind of thing, right?
Yeah, and it's also over 4 weeks, right? So that really bumped it up, right, in terms of like trending searches. And I think for the most part, people found the videos and the players and the teams all within like the search app or the search site itself, which kind of contributed to why it was super trending.
How different was the global search trends compared to Malaysia? I know World Cup was still the number one in global and in Malaysia.
Yeah.
What else was different in Malaysia?
So we've been doing this for about 7 years for Malaysia since, you know, we started Google Malaysia in 2011. So this is the most political year we've seen. Right? So in terms of the people searches and in terms of the top three searches, you know, first was people were checking on their voter registration, right? So SPR trended. And one of our news sites, Astro Awani, also trended because we feel they became kind of the go-to for a lot of Malaysians in terms of like the news. And the first time, top 10 almost did not include any celebrities.
Wow.
Which, you know, we've never seen before.
And it was mostly just politicians.
Yeah, I'd say 9 out of 10.
Wow.
You know, there's probably only one celebrity that squeezed in there, which we've never seen before.
Wow. Any surprises then in terms of search queries, besides the fact that, you know, there were only like one celebrity in the top 10 searches, which is a new thing?
Well, generally, you know, search trends follow current affairs and current events and people associated with that. So in that sense, not so much surprising. But what was surprising was even though some of these local entertainment dramas and series all made it into the search terms, but the people were almost entirely made out of politicians and political players, so to speak.
And if you look at last year's and even the previous search results, are there like trends or themes that goes around? I know it's mostly based on the, you know, current climate, the political climate and stuff, but are there kind of like general themes that you can then sort of predict what's going to, you know, happen in 2019 and stuff
Actually,
like that?
Actually, one of those things that I never dare to do is predict, right? You know, it's one of those things, I'm paraphrasing, but it's like you kind of overestimate, you know, short-term or long-term changes, but then you underestimate the short-term ones. So, you know, year in search is an annual thing and we only look at trends that change between a year and the next, so 2017 versus 2018 and 2019. Actually, a lot of that fluctuates. So, yeah, I never predict. So I never do any crystal ball gazing at all. And, you know, the tech industry has ruined me.
So let's talk about Google itself as a company. This was a big year for you guys. Artificial intelligence was also a huge step forward. I think it's defeated more humans in 2018 than it has ever was in the past. past before. We're a lot more comfortable of saying artificial intelligence as well. Previously, we had to like sort of, you know, mask it around with deep learning, machine learning, those kind of words.
Pattern recognition. I think everybody is comfortable calling it AI now because it's a benevolent kind of AI, right? An AI that helps you work better. The AI that finds you the next song to listen to, the movie to watch. The AI that kind of helps you because it, you know, if you allow it to know where you are traveling, it kind of gives you your schedule information that's useful, like weather and currency exchange and stuff like that. So I think as long as it's useful and not intrusive, most folks are okay with a little bit of assistance. From the Google Assistant or from other assistants.
And speaking of Google Assistant, this year itself, we saw Google Duplex, which is that voice assistant within the Google Assistant itself. That kind of freaked out a lot of people, but excited me because, you know, it could now do calls and it could help me do appointments and stuff.
Again, the usefulness factor, right? So, I mean, there's a wow factor there, there's usefulness factors. And then, of course, you know, good that, you know, privacy folks are concerned about, like, you know, how it's being represented. And, you know, we made that fix, and it is kind of rolling out already to a few Pixel users.
What's changed in the artificial intelligence space? Is it the way that we teach machine learning? Is it the reach of how we you know tell consumers about artificial intelligence or businesses adopting artificial intelligence? What's changed in the year?
I think generally the one thing that has happened in the realm of machine learning or AI is just that computing power has come to a stage where we can actually deal with huge data sets. And then these huge data sets can then give birth to, like, you know, good pattern recognition that then becomes useful stuff that, you know, most people can tap into. You know, folks are familiar with YouTube next video suggestions. Folks are familiar with search autocomplete. Folks are familiar with email auto-reply. You know, these are all actually AI things that, you know, we kind of take for granted. But at the same time, you know, we also do have cutting-edge stuff. Like 2 weeks ago, we announced in Thailand that, like, the Google AI was able to detect diabetic retinopathy in patient scans, which, you know, is super useful in countries where there may not be enough eye doctors to kind of pore over these images, right? These medical images take it causes a lot of fatigue poring over them, and sometimes it's good to be able to outsource it to a non-human like algorithm, which then, you know, picks out some of these anomalies and then alerts, you know, a human expert. It's a really transparent way of helping experts do their jobs better. We've seen this before, of course. Google Translate has been helping translators for about a decade now. And it's just something that, you know, most translators take for granted. At least, you know, I certainly do when I do BM English and, you know, vice versa. And, you know, 7 years ago, let's just say Google Translate wasn't what it was now.
But the conversations of, you know, artificial intelligence going to take over our jobs and stuff, that's kind of diminished already. I know you don't like to look at, you know, predictions or your crystal ball and to predict what's happening, but there are changes happening where it's now working with us. And improving us, becoming more efficient. Like you mentioned about imagery recognition, it's tough for us. It's fatigue for us. AI could do it with no sleep.
It's something that augments humanity's abilities, I feel. I mean, you know, one of the best stories that I heard about how, you know, the initial worry about AI and jobs was like, actually, we learned a lot from the Industrial Revolution, right? There was a point in time when people were very worried that, you know, automated factories we're going to actually take away livelihoods of, you know, labor. But what that did was, in fact, it freed up a lot more people to pursue creative pursuits, pursue other things, you know, invent other things. And I think that's really what is able to happen when AI augments, you know, what is naturally humanity's expertise and capabilities.
Now, we seem to have mastered or at least, you know, made leaps and bounds in narrow AI field. So, you know, whether it's playing Go with a human or whether it's image recognition in the healthcare industry or even, you know, creating music for you or suggesting the best kind of songs that you would want to listen to based on your mood or even completing your email. Narrow AI, we seem to have tackled that. Where is it going to move forward in 2019? Because there is still that fear that, you know, the movies like to portray it, which is the artificial general intelligence, the Skynets and the Matrix and stuff.
Yeah.
Is that still, you know, far-fetched of a dream, or should we actually start having a conversation about what can we achieve with artificial intelligence?
Yeah, I think we are already having those conversations. I mean, you know, AI experts definitely have, I mean, like a code of conduct or like, you know, best practices. I mean, we at Google has, I mean, we've actually announced our ethical AI initiative, right? And folks can check it out online. And one of the things that we are really careful about in there is, you know, protecting people's anonymity.
Mm.
And at the same time, you know, making sure that it's not used, for example, to, you know, wage war or violence, right? You know, that's something that our researchers are actively against as well.
Mm. And data and privacy concerns have also reached an all-time high. Personally, for me, my mom has been asking me, like, should I approve this, you know, permission that my phone is asking me or my tablet is asking me and stuff. So for me, that's kind of showing a sense of the internet maturity that we are seeing around. Previously, it was a very Western conversation about data privacy. Yes. Now it's, you know, seeping into my mom is also asking me about this.
Yeah.
How do you draw the line when it comes to giving consumers the ease of you know, using any services that you that you have,
yeah,
but also, you know, ensuring that the privacy is protected and there is a code of conduct there?
Yeah, I think internet companies are probably, you know, this is probably not said often enough. Most internet companies rely on trust from users, and, you know, they are for the most part paranoid about that trust.
Mm.
I mean, it doesn't cost anything for people to leave a service, right? For the most part, the services are free. So they themselves are paranoid, just as Google is, about, you know, making sure that trust factor is maintained. And one of the things that has changed over the last couple of years is, you know, the opt-in as opposed to opt-out. So people who value privacy generally prefer the opt-in approach. And that's, for the most part, why folks are having conversations now, because your app now is asking you permission.
Mm.
Whereas before, there may have been a time where that permission was taken for granted. So your mom is seeing all these prompts, and then she's able to actively okay or not okay certain things, right? And then hopefully the stuff that she okays is the one that gives her the user benefit and then that magical sort of relationship with, you know, machine learning and, you know, AI.
Mm, and it's learning as well, because a lot of this stuff that was out before in the past was very new as well, and we were also very new to it.
Yeah.
But it's then, you know, companies like Google, yourselves, are learning and seeing how we adapt and we change.
Yeah, it's a conversation that we keep having, right, you know, with users. And, you know, for the most part, you know, users now are super vocal, right?
Mm.
And they take online, they form petitions, you know, they are, you know, they give feedback directly, right? So it's one of those things that, you know, collectively brings the conversation and moves kind of the zeitgeist forward.
I'm speaking to Zafri Yusuf from Google Malaysia, and when we come back, we'll talk about some of the services that didn't quite survive the year that was 2018. BFM 89.9.
Bulldozing fine measures. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Jeff Sandu here, and with me today is Zafri Yusuf. He's from Google Malaysia. And early on, we were talking about the Year in Search report. And from there, we talked about artificial intelligence and also data privacy. But Zaf, let's talk about some things that didn't quite survive the year. Google Plus, most notably. you know, that kind of ended in August 2018, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's a, you know, it's a milestone for me, right? Because when I first joined Google Plus, it's like birth.
Yeah.
Yeah, and here I am. 7 years later, you know, we decide to sunset it, just like we did one of my other favorite apps, Google Reader.
Mm, yeah.
Back in the day. But, you know, we have a history of sunsetting stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, for the most part, you know, we try and sunset it. And we are going to sunset one more thing, Allo. I don't know if you've
missed
it, right? Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, these things come and go. The useful ones stick around. The not so useful ones, the ones that don't get, you know, we really have like a tough sort of benchmark for ourselves, you know. I mean, we have 7 products that have 1 billion plus users, right?
Yeah.
So any product that doesn't make the 1 million cut, like, you know, active users, you know, we kind of seriously look at maybe the resources are better channeled elsewhere. You know, it really is. It's about smartly channeling engineering resources, which are, you know, still something that the world needs more of, right?
And sometimes some products may be out too soon in the market as well. So, right?
Timing is like, you know, as you know, in tech, timing is everything, right? That's a, you know, the famous story about, like, you know, the predecessor to smartphones, right? I don't even remember this thing called Pippin.
Yeah.
So that was something that came out like in the early 90s. And then, you know, everybody, you know, who's old enough like me kind of remembers the Palm, you know, the PDAs. You know, those things were a little bit early, but useful nonetheless, you know, but never got that mainstream acceptance that, you know, smartphones now have.
Mm. But sticking with the Google Plus, you know, the social media space have changed a lot. How do you view from Google's perspective in terms, because it's not just connecting family and friends now, it's being used for so many other things, for good and for bad as well. Mm. How does Google see this space?
We look at this space, of course, through the lens of YouTube, right? That is our social media network, so to speak, you know, not in a traditional sense, but more in a conversational, you know, people taking time to curate stuff, upload stuff, have a conversation. You know, one of those things that I think we really saw this year was like this left and right polarization, right? Mm. I think, you know, we're probably seeing some of that play out locally as well. In the Malaysian scene, and you know, in the internet, folks get really vocal. You know, things are shared quite openly. Things get viral very fast. And I think probably the one thing that social media and the internet has enabled is making these conversations happen at light speed. Right? Mm. There was a time when you could say there was an issue of the month. I think these days you have several issues a week, and people move on from that, right? I mean, what is the next thing? What is the next thing? So I was looking at our year in search video, and really, some of those scenes, I forgot because they happened earlier in the year, right? And that's just a measure of how time is compressed so much, I think, you know, in terms of our ability to access information, news, thoughts, ideas. We really are kind of compressing a lot of life in a lot less time now, I feel, personally.
Mm, mm. I think that's very true. So I remember looking back at the video as well on Google's video, you know, the year in search, and there was some of the things I just completely missed out. And I was like, was that this year?
Yeah.
It just felt like way too long ago. But then you look back, it's like, it was in March or April in 2018 and just completely slipped out of your mind.
Speaking of long ago, so one of the things that we noticed, and you know, this is in hindsight, right? If you want to launch a movie or TV series, launch it early in the year because it's going to trend longer. It's got a long tail effect.
That's a
actually
tip,
yeah, man. You asked me that earlier. What was the surprising thing? Yeah, that was kind of like the aha moment. Man, you know, if you want to do like a drama series, and you know, the thing about drama series now, nobody needs to watch it when it airs on TV, right? You can watch it on, pick any of the streaming services. You know, if you launch it earlier in the year, people have like 9-10 months to watch it. Mm. And then you'll definitely trend, which is what we saw in like, you know, some of the local series.
That's an interesting tip. Also, I just want to talk, is there a louder cry for like an internet police? Because you talked about the YouTube, you know, and there's probably a bigger polarization now between the left and the right. Mm. Is there a louder cry of internet police? Because it's just really tough.
Yeah.
From a Google's point of view as well, it's not all down to Google's fault, which it seems to be the blame that everyone will point. It's the tech company's problems. Like, it's their fault.
I think it's the online literacy, right? I mean, everybody talks about the, you know, basic literacy of reading, writing, arithmetic. I think it's really, you know, it's time to add that one more thing, right? You know, which is actually the ability to think critically, right? Mm. I mean, logic, for example, it's probably not something that Malaysian schools teach, I feel. But it really is the beginning of being able to form and argue ideas in a calm, rational way. And then come to, like, you know, some sort of stand based on facts and not just opinions. Right. Which I think, you know, is probably the basis of much of these polarizations. People confuse facts and opinions. Now, you know, most tech companies would rather deal with facts, right? Because that's at least empirical stuff, right? Opinions are a little bit tough. And I don't know if anybody should police opinions. Mm. You know, we're getting into really murky territory there, right? Mm. And I think, you know, one concession was made, obviously, hate opinion, you know, is for the most part disqualified by most upstanding and right-thinking individuals, right? But, you know, what actually constitutes hate speech? That's a tough one, right?
Yeah.
That is really tough. Mm. And I don't know if companies can arbitrate that.
And it's it's difficult. It's a conversation that we will have for a long time until, you know,
very long time, yes.
And part of making that come to, I guess, to a greener side of world is the education side. Were there changes in the education space or from the technology point of view of how, you know, tech is helping the education sector in 2018?
I think we saw a few, well, you know, we celebrated 20 years of Google search. And yes, that's how dated we are, right? 2 decades old. And one of the things that we wanted to do was find some interesting Malaysian stories about, you know, people who taught themselves stuff. So, you know, we did find a few interesting, you know, an ex-army person who taught himself business by generally watching YouTube videos and doing search on how to do business. And, you know, doesn't speak English at all.
Wow.
And did it completely in Malay.
Wow.
We profiled like this really young chef, Danny Sharas. You may have heard of him. Bakes cakes, he's like, what, 11? It's completely self-taught, right? And he bakes in his kitchen now because the mom and dad set it up and, you know, he streams his stuff, right? And then, you know, our motorsports queen, like Leona Chen, right? She too, like, you know, uses the internet to source for her next build because she also builds cars. And she kind of has openly admitted that, you know, some of that skills that she's got, she got it all online. So, you know, I think in that sense, you know, as long as we teach our kids to learn how to learn, I think for the most part, they are able to discover their passions online and probably even make a living online. I mean, this is the first year we saw more than 16 Malaysian YouTube channels reach goal. 1 million subs, mind you, right? 2 years ago, there was one. So, you know, the millennials and the Gen Zs, or however you want to refer to them, are really discovering their own path, really. And most of that path involves online resources.
I like what you said, to learn how to learn, because that seems like, you know, something that it's a bit of an oxymoron kind of thing, but it's missing out. There are a lot of people who are not hungry enough to understand that there needs to be, you need to learn things. Maybe set out each month, I'm going to learn one thing, whether it's an online or offline one thing. It's so easy nowadays.
Plus content. One to that. Absolutely.
So on the business side, what about the small businesses or the medium scale businesses in here in Malaysia? What kind of advancements have you seen them adopting technology for their own business?
I think most of them use the free facilities already, right? So, you know, at least on Google terms, it's Maps and Search, right? So we've had this thing called Google My Business for a while. And we kept adding features to it. And one of the features that you can add is actually having Q&A now. So savvy business owners have claimed their business on Google Search and Maps and starting to have Q&A, getting leads through that. And this is all completely free, obviously. And then they also have posts that they can do. So if you're a restaurant, you know, you can post your whole entire menu there. People can check it out. You can also post promos if you feel like doing that. You can manage all of this basically from your Google app. In it's called the Google My Business app. And it works for iOS and for Android. So savvy businesses are doing that. And on top of that, they're taking 360-degree images of their premise. Especially useful if your premise is your selling point, right? Upload it yourself.
And you can do it with your phone itself, right?
Yeah, once upon a time, you actually had to call a Street View camera to do that.
Yeah.
Now, your typical runner, mid-range phone can do that.
Wow.
So that's pretty powerful. And in HD as well, right? 4K as well, right? So you're giving people a 4K semi-street view experience of your business premise.
Wow. So so let's talk a bit about the consumer side. Pixel 3 was launched, so we've seen advancements in software, in AI for photos, street view, as you mentioned as well. What are some of the things that really caught your attention from the consumer kind of services that you provide? I'm a daydreamer, so, you know, I like to couch surf most of the time. I'll go on Google Maps and I'll, you know, I'll do a street view and traveling around some mountains in, you know, Sweden or going to, you know, Fiji and stuff. So I'll do that for like 20 minutes and I enjoy it. That's a personal preference that I've seen an improvement in street view. What are some of the things that caught your attention?
Well, I feel like, you know, those, you know, the dreamers of the world, like, you know, are the ones that actually utilize technology in a really positive way, I feel. So that those part of the services hopefully will always be around, and, you know, there's no reason to think why they won't be around. But, you know, we spoke about what it was that really made an impact this year, and it's really AI. And that has happened across the board. And I expect that very same theme to continue in 2019, maybe in more surprising ways. Not just, you know, taking wide-angle selfies, you know, being able to figure out where your eyes are so that you take the most, like, emotional photo, or, you know, figuring out if you're really smiling and, you know, being able to automate the image taking, you know, fixing the lighting even if you're overexposed or underexposed, right? You know, all these things are, like, immediately useful stuff, right? But I personally look forward to the life-changing stuff that experts are able to tap to collectively make, you know, humanity's lives better. And I think 2019, 2020 will be when those things become more and more mainstream.
So let's talk about tech for good, internet for good. Some notable stuff that you want to highlight?
Well, this year, one of the most exciting things that we at Google Malaysia did was work with a group of Malaysian NGOs. So we did some coding workshops. We invited maybe about 20 of them. And then at the end of that, you know, we showcased five different NGOs from Malaysian Nature Society to a few others. I should remember their names. But these are folks that have been using Google Earth tools, Google Maps API tools, all completely free, by the way, to enhance their conservation work. Mm. And then for the most part, these are non-coders, right? I mean, it's great to see technology come to a stage where people who are passionate enough about conservation work and about tracking wild animal path and then using that data to then inform authorities about how they should adjust maybe the road that they plan to build or the, you know, project that they want to put in the area. But these data points then become public data points. And I think more and more of that hopefully will happen. And that's sort of the my fervent hope, at least, you know, in Malaysia, where we have businesses are cool, right? But NGOs are definitely, you know, one group of organization or entities that can benefit from a lot of these new things and, you know, AI in particular. I mean, we've seen the Thai story that I mentioned to you. In Indonesia, illegal fish poaching is also being helped. In New Zealand, people are using, NGOs are using AI to monitor forest, you know, for forest conservation. And I think these are areas that may not get like a lot of, you know, spotlight in the public eye because they're very specialized areas, obviously, right? But it's these things that collectively, I feel, you know, impact human civilization as a whole. And that's where technology does its job best. You know, not just entertaining us, but, you know, helping us live better lives.
And also, it's not about AI taking over our lives and stuff. It's actually saving mankind. It's saving planet Earth.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, like, you know, AI that, like, just like, you know, what was that story about the science and the atomic bomb, right? It's what humans use it for, right?
It's what you use it for.
Yeah, it's what you use it for. I mean, you know, if the better angels of our nature, right, win over, I don't think we have anything to worry about. I'm, you know, obviously a technology optimist. This is what I do.
But there needs to be positivity.
The end of the day, right? And I think things work out for the better if folks focus on the positives.
I know you don't like looking at the crystal ball. So 2019, though, what are you personally excited? What are you, because you are in, you know, the space of the giant as well. What are you seeing that Malaysians should get excited?
I look forward to more Malaysians upskilling or reskilling themselves. I think there's been no better time than now and in the near future when you can use some of these new skills. It doesn't have to be coding, right? It could just be like the ability to be familiar with technology stuff and tools. For the most part, these tools are free. And for the most part, these tools assist you do your job or your hobby better. And, you know, one of the things that we hope to announce, at least in 2019, and, you know, this is something that I'll definitely get back to you, is some sort of skilling program that involves, you know, YouTube creators, that involves SMBs, that involves education coders, that involves entrepreneurs, something to that effect, you know. And that's, you know, the 2019 plan that we have, at least.
I guess it's also a perfect 2019 kind of motivation or goal that you can set is to learn something new, because most of the stuff is free.
I like what you said, learn a new thing a day, or learn a new fact a day, in fact. Oh. Right? You know, that's good enough, right?
Zeph, yeah. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
That was Zafri Yusof from Google Malaysia looking back at the year that was 2018. My name is Jeff Sandu, and if you missed any parts of the show, you can download the podcast. It's available on the BFM website, or better yet, get the BFM app. This has been Tech Talk on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.